Has your doctor ever told you that adjusting your diet will help a health condition that you have? And did you make the adjustment? Or were you confused about what exactly needed to change and how to go about it? Well, if you're still ready to change, then stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. When it comes to changing our entire dietary pattern, it will seem overwhelming unless there's a life-threatening disease looming that can be stopped or reversed by making that change. But being willing to change is not enough. Support and guidance are essential. Here's Willie B. Jr., who found all of that and more with the Ornish Reversal Program. His story is brought to us by Beacon Health Systems.
Well, June the 24th, I was having chest pains. I called my mom, I called my cousin, and I'd say after about 10 minutes, I'll call the ambulance, but they subsided. But my cousin came and got me, and I came to Elk Creek General. About 20 minutes after that, I was taken in the back and hooked up to monitors, and come to find out I had a mild heart attack. Scared. I was feeling really scared. I didn't really know the foods to eat. I really didn't know how much to eat. And that was the main problem I was having, was overeating and not eating the right type of foods. My doctor, I think he said it, look, it's like this. Either you gotta lose weight or you're not gonna make it. You'll be right back to see me again the rest of your life. Well, my doctor was kind of hard, but he was right. I always wanted to lose weight, but I just didn't know how to go about it until he told me about this program. So here I am. I started feeling the effects, I say, about the fourth week, because that's when we first really got the good weight and the good news of, wow, you're really losing weight. And when somebody walks up to you that knows you for years and look at you like, wow, you're getting thin. And it's time, okay, let's keep on doing this. That's motivation right there. Oh, wow, I can run a mile. No, that's just kidding. but no, I tell you, when I first came here, I barely made it up to the cardiac rehab. Now I can actually walk down and walk a little farther more than what I did. I would never accomplish that without the Ornish program.
And most of us need a certain amount of coaching and support to achieve our health goals. So today we have an expert who does just that. I'll give some tips on how to control portion size, and there's a new recipe waiting for you in Go Healthy's kitchen. But first, the news. In the headlines today, more vitamin D, less cancer. Soy counteracts toxins and fertility, and family dinners prevent metabolic mass. According to recent studies, there is a clear relationship between vitamin D levels and the risk of cancer. Current evidence suggests that low levels of vitamin D are associated with increased risk of a number of cancers, including prostate, lung, and breast cancer. In order to ascertain what level of vitamin D might be protective, a recent study combined data from two different studies involving 2,300 older women. Those women with a level over 40 nanograms per mil had 67% less cancer than those women with levels less than 20. So if your vitamin D level is low, consider correcting it with supplementation and catch some extra sunshine during the summer months. Soy foods may protect against the adverse reproductive effects of environmental toxins, according to a new study. Researchers at Harvard University followed 239 women undergoing assisted reproduction in 347 IVF cycles to see if there was a relationship between soy intake, bisphenol A or BPA levels, and the success of fertility treatment. In women not consuming soy, Research has found that those with the highest BPA levels had 70% less chance of having a successful pregnancy than those with the lowest BPA levels. Whereas for women consuming soy, BPA levels made no difference to live birth rates. While this data is preliminary, it seems that adding soy to your diet might just protect your pregnancy from the deleterious effects of endocrine disruptors like BPA. Adolescents who eat at least one meal a week with an adult in their family have better health. And the fewer meals eaten alone, the less obesity, the lower cholesterol, and the more ideal their blood pressure, according to a Toronto-based study involving over 14,000 grade 9 students. The greatest benefit is seen when kids eat with their family on a daily basis. Researchers also noticed that kids who eat alone more frequently and those who brought lunch at school were also more likely to eat at restaurants. And restaurant meals contain more sugar, fat, and salt than home-cooked meals. So perhaps patterns of eating set kids up for poorer health as adults, which means that attractive, healthy home-cooked meals are powerful ways to prevent chronic diseases in your children and grandchildren. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Our guest today is Dr. John Gobble, registered dietitian, coach and fitness specialist who works at Lifestyle Medicine Group in Clackamas, Oregon. I asked him what he does when a doctor sends a reluctant patient to his office for dietary change.
The main thing is to try to help them understand what is it that they want, what's most important to them, and then you link that to their eating habits. So it's how do we, like some kind of condition that's for diabetes or something, their weight, and the doctor says you need to lose some weight, so let's, why don't you talk to the dietitian? And they may be kind of, oh, I've heard that before, I don't want another diet and this type of thing. And what they'll do is they'll come to me and I'll just sit back and I'm not going to try to intimidate them and say, well, this is what you need to go, here's a diet. But just sit back and say, what's important to you? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? How are you going to feel? What's it going to be like? And then we get them thinking. It's like, okay, thinking. They have to think about their life, their health, and food together. And so that's how I initially start. Whether they're kind of resistant or full on, I still ask that question. And that's my role, is to help them make a better choice. And it's first, it's to get them to realize what's really important to them in that regard.
Now, you're also a health educator and a coach. You must bring more to the table than the average dietitian, do you?
Probably so. Yeah. Just that I'm aware of it a lot. But even then, when people are educated in dietetics and nutrition, they are given opportunities to learn how to counsel and this type of thing. But if you can go into coaching and take a coaching course, then that really helps a lot to try to connect with what the person really wants and what's important to them. So it's listening. Part of coaching is just listening. And part of coaching is to drive that person to think about what they need, especially in a brief situation, I don't know anything about a person. They come to me, I know very little. I can have them fill out questionnaires, and I can learn, ask them lots of questions about their diet and their eating habits, but I still don't know that person. They know everything there is to know about them. And so all I want to do is say, you know everything. I don't say it this way, but I'm assuming they know all about themselves, so what is it that will help them make a better choice? How, at this time, in their environment, their social influences and stuff will help them make a better choice. And then they come up with the best answers. And I just kind of help direct.
Ideas and choice. He makes it sound so easy. After the break, I'll see you in the kitchen. But first, this.
Hey, let's have a big party this weekend.
You won't have time or energy to organize that.
Yes, I will. I'm full of energy. I feel great. I'll text people right now.
No, think about it first.
No, 200 people invited. There.
Oh no, 200? I think that's the energy drink talking.
Oh, I feel terrible. Why did I invite 200 people to that dumb party?
I don't know, but I think the caffeine just wore off.
Oh, you're right. I just need some more caffeine. I'm out of energy drink. I'll go get some coffee. Oh, I feel so much better now. I've ordered now 3 bouncy castles for that party for the children this weekend.
Oh, great. But you're a drug addict.
No, I'm not. I don't take drugs.
Yes, you do. You get jittery, sleepy, and headachey if you don't have a coffee or energy drink in your hand.
So?
Well, those are all symptoms of drug addiction. Caffeine is actually classed as the world's most popular drug.
Really?
Uh-huh. So lead a steady life by avoiding social drug addiction. Doctor's orders.
Welcome back to Go Healthy's Kitchen. And with me in the kitchen today is Phil. Phil, I'm going to show us something today that is my husband's favorite, current favorite. Right, it changes, but...
I understand that.
You do?
Oh, absolutely.
What's your current favorite?
Oh, you know, that's a hard thing to say. There's a lot of things. Sadly, maybe ice cream.
Oh, it's confession time. Well, today I want to share with you a recipe that I like adapting recipes, you know. This is stroganoff. And so what do you think of if I say stroganoff, Phil?
I think of rich, heavy creams, and I love it. Yeah. But usually it's not the healthiest thing to
yeah.
eat.
Yeah, and it's usually beef, right?
Absolutely.
So we're going to make it with tofu today. So why don't you share what's in the recipe for us?
Sure. So this has 1 package of extra firm tofu, drained, about 14 ounces, 2 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil, and 2 tablespoons of water, 1 large onion, diced, 2 cloves of garlic, minced or crushed, 12 ounces of mushrooms, sliced, 1/4 cup of unsweetened soy milk, 1 teaspoon of dried thyme, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, 2 tablespoons of chicken-like seasoning, 1/2 cup of soy sour cream, 2 teaspoons of cornstarch mixed with a little water to thicken it, and then you're going to garnish this with a handful of fresh parsley or some other type of herb.
Now, it sounds like a lot of ingredients, right?
It does, but I will say that this smells absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and I started cooking already because it was going to be too long to fit into this little time frame. And so what I've done is I've already... if I'm using a non-stick fry pan, I'm just using a saucepan, then I'll want to use that oil and that water. But if I'm doing it on a non-stick pan, I don't need to add any oil to this. It just, and so I haven't used oil for this. I've just put in the onions and the garlic, and in go our mushrooms. I think anything with mushrooms tastes amazing, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's something that I've kind of acquired a taste since I was a kid. I wasn't a big fan of it, but it's one thing that I love, a recipe that has mushrooms, especially after you've sauteed them a little bit. And I feel like that's a really great tip about the nonstick pan, because it's too easy to put in a lot of oil just to make sure that things don't stick. If you have sort of a lot of the pots and pans that I've had throughout my life have not been the best, and it seems like oil is the way to salvage it, but you're ruining your meal by doing that.
Right, because if, and I dilute the oil down with the water. You know, the original recipe before I converted this was 2 tablespoons of oil, which is probably what you'd need if you were going to stir fry all of this, these goodies together. You need that moisture until your mushroom goes in. But with, why not replace that moisture with water? It works just as well.
That's a great tip.
Mm. So now what I've done ahead of time is done the really tricky bit, or the fiddly bit, which is to slice your tofu block. I slice it 1/3 through horizontally and then 4 ways vertically. And I end up with these kind of tofu sticks. I then fry them each side, again in the non-stick pan. Fry them each side and then pop them in the oven for 20 minutes while I do this part. And so I pre-did that because we just got the 1 pan. But if you want to cut them up, you can cut them into either half or thirds. You can just make this recipe, you know, however you like it. You can cube your tofu even if you want. Though I think because it's traditionally a recipe that has strips of beef, you sort of, we're making it look and be the texture of beef. And so once you've got this out of the oven and, or out of the fry pan, into the oven, out of the oven, you've got quite a, if you feel it, it's not dissimilar to rubber, but actually it's chewy when you taste it. And it actually is a gorgeous texture.
Which is actually very similar to the beef that people are used to if they've had it in regular stroganoff. So you've got a good mimic of what people put into stroganoff.
Right. That's exactly right, which is, I'm sure, why some of the recipes I found had this fried, baked tofu. And you don't have to do it this way. You know, I was telling someone about this recipe the other day, and they said, oh, I make that with just chickpeas instead of the tofu.
Ah.
So I'm going to have to go away and try that.
You know, the one thing I like about tofu is it picks up the flavors of the other foods that it's in. And so you're really going to pick up with the sauces, and you're going to pick up all the stroganoff flavors. One thing I like, though, is stroganoff usually is noodles, beef, and sour cream. Those are kind of the three main ingredients, and what we're doing is we're replacing two of those to make our own form of stroganoff.
That's true. And so, you know, we have a recipe with tofu sour cream, or you can buy your sour cream, but if you use our recipe, it's going to look just as good as the store-bought dairy sour cream or the tofu sour cream that you buy in the store. So,
and this way you can add a little bit, tweak it a little bit if you prefer a certain flavor. And then it's fresh, and it is actually very easy to make yourself.
That's right, it is. Well, those mushrooms have sweated out a little bit, so I'm going to add in. Actually, why don't you do it for me? I'll throw in a little salt.
This is the milk.
The milk. And that's really just to add some moisture, and you can adjust that.
Should I throw it all in?
Yes, let's do that. So a little thyme, chicken seasoning, that's kind of the secret ingredient for the flavoring. And as we mix that together, we're going to really get the flavors of the mushrooms and the herbs come through.
And that smells, smell is one thing that I absolutely love with cooking. And at first we had the garlic and the onion, which smelled amazing. Now we've got all those seasonings, which culminate into what really smells amazing. It's too bad that you're not here to smell it, because this is a really great recipe as far as the senses go.
Yeah, it is. So we're just missing one sense now, and that's the taste. Now, I'm going to let that kind of simmer up and really get the moisture come out of those mushrooms, simmer that for probably 10 minutes before. Now, you can put the tofu in so it gets some of that flavor. Why don't we do that? It'll get some of that flavor. We'll just leave it sitting on top and absorbing some of that mushroom flavor and the herbs. And then right at the end, right before you serve, just then you'll want to add your sour cream. So we're going to let that sit. Now it's time to taste it. Tell me what you think.
This looks absolutely amazing. Now, I would easily substitute my previous stroganoff recipes for that. That is really good.
I got the thumbs up. There you go. Nice. Now, back to Willie B, who was frightened when he learned he'd had a heart attack. So, reluctantly, he joined the Ornish Reversal Program at Beacon Health Systems. Here's his story. Watch.
The four elements that we did was like the stress, the group therapy, the nutrition, and the workout, the physical therapy part. I would have never accomplished none of that if I had to do this by myself. When you think about workout, you think, okay, I'm going to do this. It's not going to work. I'm just going to sit in here, waste my time. Lo and behold, once you started, and every time we came back the next day, you get farther and farther and farther. Like, I did 8 minutes. All of a sudden, I come back, I can do 10 minutes. The next time I come back, I can do 15 minutes. And that's just a change within 2 days. I'll tell them about the program, don't hesitate. Try it, because it really do work. I know when you hear, oh man, we gotta change food, we gotta eat different stuff. If it's anything to do with your health, try it. The Ornish program for me, it was beautiful. I was scared at first and hesitant, because you hear all these people saying, oh, try this, oh, this works, this diet works. Well, this diet actually do works. I'm sitting here at a living proof for you today. If you are a heart patient like me and have cardiac disease, look at the Ornish program. It works.
Great endorsement. On today's show, we're talking to Dr. John Gobble, dietitian and fitness coach, who helps people to make changes just like that. I asked him how long he works with someone like Willie B. Jr.
I want to help that person make a behavior change, and behavior changes don't happen overnight. No. So it's like, let's start with a little step. And let's say it's eating breakfast, because a lot of people don't eat breakfast. So let's say eating breakfast, and what kind of choices you can have for breakfast. And so I have them come up with something, and then I say, okay, try it. And then next week we'll get together and you explain to me what you experienced. What did you learn about breakfast and how it could fit into your schedule and what kinds of foods were you able to get, what was available to you. And then we'll start from there. Okay, and then they leave. Then they come back and we do it again. What did you learn? And we go over that and we take them to the next step. And so we typically will see a person for like a weight management at least once a week for the first month. And then maybe twice a month after that. And maybe at least once a month for at least 6 months or a year. I have some people I've seen at least once a month for over 2 years. And it's just this continual reinforcement, helping them move them along, because some of the lifestyles people are living in because of their economic situation or what have you is quite challenging. And so it's like, let's get together and tackle it. And boy, they get that reinforcement and change occurs. It takes about 3 weeks for any single behavior to kind of get wired in. But when we're dealing with multiple different kinds of behaviors with exercise and different kinds of food choices and it could take quite a while, but with that persistence, it's wonderful. You see the change in people.
So you're taking baby steps that are achievable each week or each 2 weeks. And how do you hold them accountable?
Well, I ask them, first thing I say, hey, when you do your breakfasts or whatever it might be, write it down. Tell me about it. Make a note saying, what did we have today? So at the end of the day, sit down and journal what you just experienced with food. What foods did you eat? How much? Where were you? How did you feel? What was the environment like? And, you know, just a little diary. Or just make a list. I have one lady, she just makes lists of everything she does. She puts her blood sugars on the side and she just writes down everything. And then I sit down and I can look at those sheets and we can start with that. And if she doesn't have it, it's like, well, what happened? What was... oh, I forgot, or you know, issues happened, and we talk about some of those things. But that writing down is really good because it brings people aware, and it helps them become more accountable. And then they know they can see me, then they know I've got to make better choices, otherwise they have to report it to me.
That's cool. So you're very kind in your accountability, but you're still there. There's still an end point. Now, how long, you mentioned that 3 weeks takes that long to develop something new, but it must take longer before something becomes more, oh, I have to think about this, to it becoming a habit. How long does that take?
Well, to become, it depends on the kind of habit it is. If you have some things that are drawing you down, like let's say you have a habit, of course, smoking, for example, it's an addiction, and you can get through that in a week, but then you have this persistent behavior that you're trying to tackle, and the kind of the psychological and the addictive piece of it is struggling through there. But in addition to smoking, there's other things, just like just changing a simple habit. Think about it like flossing your teeth. A lot of people, you go to the dentist, they always say, floss your teeth. Okay, but a lot of people don't floss their teeth. So it's saying, okay, let's decide you're going to floss your teeth. You've got to do it on a regular basis. And doing it regularly, it takes about 3 weeks to kind of say, okay, I'm feeling more comfortable with it. And that's really the time. And with that kind of behavior, in 3 weeks you may have it down. But you still have to keep it in there. But something else that relates, there's other factors involved than just your decision, such as social environments, like you're in school or things change or at work and you have to make a lunch every day. That just takes, it may take months to really establish some of those things.
So we should be patient with ourselves.
Oh, my.
But persistent, right?
Persistent and patient. Patient and persistent.
Now, do we have to be perfect all the time? Can we treat ourselves sometimes?
Oh, that's the most important. Many people think, oh, I really blew it. I have people that come and they say, oh, I really blew it yesterday. What happened? Oh, I went to a barbecue. And we really had all the fixings of the barbecue. And it's like, okay, but how was the rest of the day and the other times? Well, it was okay. Well, then don't feel so bad about yourself. It's what you do on a regular basis that counts. If you have the one-off time that your big birthday party or it's a picnic, barbecue type thing, okay, give yourself a break. It's not the end of the world. One meal or one celebration, one dessert, one candy bar. It's not a big deal. What you do on a regular basis is what counts. And then what happens when you do those kinds of things and you're kind of off, you really notice. And the sweet is really sweet or the salt is really salty. And so you notice the difference, when, especially when you're not doing it the rest of the week or the rest of the month. So it's be easy on yourself. That's what I say.
Great advice. Remember, Willie mentioned portion size being one of his issues, so we'll look at how to remedy that right after the break. But first, let's apply what we're learning to spiritual food. As we talk about goal setting today, I want to turn our attention to the spiritual goal of being fit for heaven. I hope it's a goal that you share with me. But what's it going to take us? In Jeremiah, God says, "You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart, and I will be found by you," declares the Lord. Now, if you were treasure hunting and I told you that you needed to search for that treasure with all your heart, what would you do? I imagine you might invest time and energy learning about the treasure. You'd hang out with other treasure hunters to learn what hunting for that treasure involves. You'd be thinking about the treasure all the time, sacrificing things in your life so that you can go on the treasure hunt. And you'd likely be training for the expedition, getting the right gear, learning the right skills, and so on. So why do we not do that when it comes to pursuing fitness for heaven? Perhaps it's because we don't keep the goal in front of us. Maybe we need to wake up each morning and put that picture of heaven in front of our minds to prevent us from being distracted all day. 1 John 2:16 has some excellent advice for heaven hunters. It says, "Don't love the world or anything in it, because the love of the world deletes a love for the Father. Everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes from the world, not from the Father. The world and its desires all pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever." Now that's what I'm on the hunt for. How about you? Welcome back. Now, most of us struggle with controlling how much to eat. You know, portion sizes have been increasing and it's really cheap to supersize our meal, maybe just a dollar and we can get so much more food. But we're not getting a bargain. We're trading our health because then we overeat. So what controls our appetite? Isn't it our hunger? Well, yes, but there are other factors, including things like our eating environment. If we eat distracted, then we can actually become more hungry and eat more. An experiment was done with children. They were sent into two rooms, half watched cartoons with food commercials and half without food commercials. There were snacks in the room, and those with the food commercials ate 45% more snacks. Now, even who we eat with will change our eating behavior. So if we have a companion at the table who's larger and eats more than us, we'll tend to do the same. Also, it's really funny, but our perception of how much we've eaten alters how hungry we feel. They did an experiment with a group of people and they offered them bowls of soup around the table. Some were small bowls, some were large bowls, but what the guests didn't know was that the bowl had a little tube coming out the bottom of it, and it went under the table and it was refilled or emptied varying to varying degrees, everyone ate the same amount of soup, but they didn't know it. Those that ate apparently a small bowl of soup thought they were hungrier than those who ate a large bowl. In another experiment, people were given a 380-calorie milkshake, except some had 620 calories on the label and others had 140 calories. Those drinking milkshake labelled 620 felt fuller when they were asked a few hours later. So reflect on your meal and remember, don't be on autopilot. Tell yourself at the end of the meal, that was plenty of food. I'm not going to feel hungry for some hours. As we eat, there's a hormone called uroguanulin, which is produced by our intestines, and it travels to the brain and gives us a feeling of fullness. But an overfed mouse, that hormone is turned off and they keep eating. Well, the good news is it's restored when they're put on a diet. So we might want to skip a couple of meals a week to reset our uroguanulin hormone. Now, next time you look at a picture of the Last Supper, which was painted in the 16th century, you'll notice that Jesus and all the disciples were thin. And that's because everyone was at that time. One clue to why they were thin was to notice the size of their plates. Their plates on the table were small. And we know that because you can compare the plate to the size of the hands and the faces. Very different to the plates of the 21st century, which are so much larger. So if you're overweight, you might want to reduce the size of your plates because a study at Cornell University found that reducing your dinner plate from 12 to 10 inches leads people to eat 22% fewer calories. Now let's turn our attention to drinking glasses. Do you have tall and thin ones or short and fat ones? Well, I'd advise you to go for tall and thin because our brain thinks, there's more in this tall and thin glass than there is in this short, fat glass. Now, when you're dishing up a meal, I'd encourage you to just start with one plate. Fill your plate, have plenty of the raw things, the fruit or the salad, and put the dressing on the side, by the way. And when you eat that meal, start with the raw things because they're going to be low in calories, high in nutrients, and they're going to fill you up faster because they've got more fiber. Put your leftovers away quickly so you're not tempted to keep grazing. Eat slowly. Skip the starter. Don't upsize your meal. It's really not a bargain if you have to upsize your wardrobe.
A vegetarian diet can improve your waistline. Can it improve your mood and make you happier? A study of 138 Adventists found that the answer is yes. The individuals following a vegetarian diet had more than 50% less depression and anxiety than the non-vegetarians. And when asked about their general moods, the vegetarians were happier. Less than 1% had mood changes that left them unhappy. Their diet made a difference. A vegetarian diet is linked to happiness and is another ageless advantage.
Now for the questions I've received from you via Facebook, text and phone. Here's our first question. Why does my stomach always feel so bloated? Well, this is a common problem. It may be because of a food intolerance, eating too much, eating too often, being constipated, having irritable bowel syndrome, or some other bowel disorder. There are numerous reasons. Next question. Catherine asks, I had spasms of the esophagus and had surgery, so I need water to push my food down now. I have reflux. Please explain why you suggest eating only three meals a day. Well, Catherine, it takes 4 to 5 hours for the stomach to empty after a typical meal. By eating frequently throughout the day, the stomach never gets a rest and it's continually churning the food over. The food that's been eaten, say, for breakfast will not have passed out of the stomach and into the small intestine even 13 hours or more, looking at the experiments that they've done. And while it's there, it can ferment, cause reflux, other problems. So another study found increased risk of colorectal cancers with increased meal frequency. So there are a number of reasons why you want to just stick to 2 or 3 meals a day. Having fixed meal times is also better for the digestive tract and for mental well-being because it takes about a month to retrain your GI tract. Try this change, but wait for the response. So just keep at it, be patient, be persistent, and you'll notice that you get fewer symptoms probably and you'll sleep better. Other side benefits will be better weight control and longevity related to episodic fasting. In other words, 15 hours from the end of dinner till the beginning of breakfast. That's just overnight. Sounds a long time, but it's just overnight. And our last question. For an anger problem, which is best, a psychiatrist or a psychologist? Well, a psychiatrist generally treats mental illnesses that require prescription medications, whereas a psychologist does counseling. So I'd recommend a psychologist, but when you call them, ask them what their primary treatment modality is. And if they say CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, then that's the therapist for you, because they should be able to teach you how to control anger. Thanks for those questions. Remember, there are so many ways to get in touch with us. You can send us an email on our website even. Now, let's go shopping. Kale abounds in a carotenoid called lutein. That's what colours nasturtiums yellow. Lutein's accumulated by the retina at the back of the eye, and especially by an area called the macula. That's responsible for central vision, and it's most at risk for oxidative damage and macular degeneration. Lutein's also protective against cataracts. Kale contains many phytochemicals that are both antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, which help avoid chronic inflammation and oxidative stress. Kale lowers the risk of cancer in the bladder, the breast, the colon, the ovary, and the prostate. And with its high fiber, it's a great tool against high cholesterol. With only 35 calories per cup of cooked kale, you can eat as much as you want. Or perhaps I should say you should eat more than you want. Steam it with onion, add a little fenugreek that cuts the bitterness, throw in some red bell peppers for sweetness and colour, and bon appetit. A number of you have asked me how to make a transition to a vegetarian diet, so I threw that question to today's guest, Dr. John Gobble, dietitian and fitness coach.
When someone wants to change their diet from a meat-centric to a plant-centric diet, from a kind of average American diet to a vegetarian or a plant-based diet, we try to take it in steps and not make huge changes all at once. But initially, some people have different ways to do it, but I try to take each meal, and I look at each meal and I say, what can you have for that meal? Let's look at breakfast. And instead of the typical ham and eggs or bacon and sausage and this type of thing, it's like, okay, let's look at the different kinds of cereals that are available. There's hot cereals, a whole grain, we call intact grain cereals, with the barley and oats and these type of things. And fruit, frozen fruit, fresh fruit, nuts, seeds, this type of thing, put a little cinnamon on it, or allspice, something like that, but making it flavorful and tasty, and it, of course, with a variety of food like that, it's a nice meal. Then look at lunch, and what can we have for lunch? And I try to give them recipes and ideas of things, but looking at it from one step at a time, let's work on each area. And we try to show them different concepts, because they'll get tied up on protein, for example, and think, where's the protein? And the problem's been is that in the national kind of health promotion, nutrition education materials, they say you got to have this portion of protein. And then the meat industry claims, well, this is protein. Here's your protein. And it's the meat or the chicken or stuff. And so they think they have to have this visible substance, this visible piece of food, and that's protein. When in fact, protein is a nutrient that's in nearly everything. So instead of calling it protein, and they look at a piece of meat and they look at it and they say, oh, this is a piece of protein, they could just as well call it fat. Because meat, many slices of meat, any types of meat, are from 40 to 60, 70% of the calories are coming from fat. So if the majority of it's coming from fat, why don't we just call that fat? And so that helps a person trying to change their diet by looking at meat differently, by saying that's really a source of fat, a concentrated fat. There's no fiber whatsoever in it, but there's fat, and fat has twice as many calories as protein or carbohydrate. And so then if they understand that foods such as legumes, that's beans and peas and those type of things, lentils, that they are a plant source of fat, I mean not fat, plant source of protein, and very little fat in it. And so it's really protein and then what we call complex carbohydrates, which is really what your body needs for your muscle energy and your brain energy and thoughts and how your body function. Your body needs that kind of carbohydrate, and it's, of course, a healthy, full of fiber food.
Right, so you're winning there. You're getting your complex carbohydrates, protein, and fiber all together.
Right.
And some antioxidants.
Oh, lots of antioxidants. Now, that's, you see, there's so many things going on in our environment that we're exposed to that create oxidative stress, these oxidative free radicals that run through. And some foods that we eat create free radicals in our system. But these foods have antioxidants that counteract those so that they don't do any damage to the DNA in our cells. And it sort of cleans them up when you have that, like berries and the greens and any kind of plants. If you look at plants and see the colors, you're seeing the multiple phytochemicals, there are thousands of nutrients. And that's where I try to explain to people, I say, look at the food. Look at how, when we look at that food, what is in there? It's not just a few nutrients. It is all those colors represent chemicals that are there for our benefit. I give this story, and it's like I say, look at the trees. That tree just stands there. There's an apple on that tree or some fruit. It just sits there. It's exposed to the sun, the rain, and all the bugs and everything and the wind and all this environment around it, but it sits there grows and grows, and that apple can be just so intact unless somebody puts a hole in it. No bug's going to get there. Why? Because there's chemicals in there that keep the bugs from eating the skin. And then you pick that and you eat that lovely fruit, that lovely pepper or whatever it might be, and then you get those nutrients and they protect you also. So I say, here's this neat relationship with food and you. So don't you want to take advantage of that? That's fantastic.
I love that. That's really good. Now, if someone's making this transition, how do they bring their family along? Let's say they've got children. They're the picky eaters, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Children can be, they can try you. But they also can be your partner. So this reminds me of the story of this family that saw me. And they came for the young daughter who needed to lose some weight. She's adolescent, and she was gaining weight, and they said, we wanted to need some help so that it's not a problem in the future, and that's great. So I said, okay, well, they agreed to do it as a family program. So we began with the education, and she was involved, and it was like, okay, let's look at some recipes, things you can make. What about a school? I talked about school, and what are some of the places? Oh, we like to go to this fast food Mexican restaurant. Okay, well, let's discuss what you could get at that restaurant. And we looked at, okay, burritos, you can get brown rice, you can get beans. Just ask them not to put the cheese or sour cream on there. Get a whole grain wrap for it and put salsa on it. And then you can go there and eat just like the other kids. Oh, that's great, I'll do that. And she was all excited that she could make her own choices, be there with her friends. It worked good. And then she helped at home. Mother was also really getting into it and trying the new recipes. Of course, Dad enjoyed them. And his cholesterol, his weight, started losing some weight. He thought it could help his cholesterol, and in fact, it did. But what was really remarkable was the fact that the mother, she apparently, and I didn't know this at the beginning, but she came a month later and told me that she went to her psychologist or psychiatrist, and she was suffering from depression. And he just told her, he says, listen, as soon as you get off that happy wagon, you won't need to see me anymore. So he was very pleased with the results, and she was very pleased. So that was an unintended consequence of eating healthy, is that her mood felt better, as well as the daughter was doing well and the husband was doing well. So when you get this family in there, children will follow, especially when they see their parents doing the same thing.
It's true. We motivate each other. There's more from Dr. Gobel after the break, so stay with us. We're back. We're speaking today with Dr. John Gobel, dietitian and coach. A group program that he runs on a regular basis is called CHIP, Complete Health Improvement Program. From the Lifestyle Medicine Institute, here are the priceless benefits of CHIP from the perspective of five different participants. Watch.
In my life, I've lost 1,000 pounds. I like to tell people I always find them again, too. I've struggled throughout my life with my weight. I've always been heavy. It's important to me that, you know, I stick around to see my grandchildren live a healthy life and life expectancy. And I've lived a very long time, very luckily. You know, I'm one of the typical examples of what you call living by luck, not by choice.
Through the CHID program, I have learned how to be a smarter shopper. I spend time at the grocery store reading labels and comparing products as to which things are my healthiest choices.
I learned how well nutrition can reverse many of the diseases that we have in our country.
I had one of my blood pressure medicines reduced by 50%. I expect when I go back to the doctor, there will be even a further reduction.
I've lost 47 pounds since I started. You know, I lost a lesser amount of weight during the first 40 days, but I've continued on since the CHID program. But during the program itself, my biggest drop was in my cholesterol level. My cholesterol level was 205 before, it was 154 after. My triglycerides went down, my blood pressure stayed the same, all my other factors went down.
I think it's honestly helped our relationship. I'm not as moody anymore.
And it's more exciting to, when we're walking around the track, we're talking and we're asking about our day, whereas we would have been sitting on the couch and like eating and watching Netflix or watching a movie together. So it's definitely, I think, brought our relationship stronger and in a more healthy way in numerous, I think, avenues.
I wish I had started it 20 or 30 years ago. I'm no young bird now, you know.
The biggest thing with CHIP is that it's a lifestyle that you can sustain because it's something you don't have to measure, you just do.
We're not waiting till we're 60 and getting a stent in our heart and having, you know, being diagnosed with some kind of high blood pressure or high cholesterol. We're trying to do this as a preventative thing, so we're choosing to be healthy, not waiting for a prescription.
It's something you can continue to do. It's a lifestyle. It's not a diet. It's a way of living to be healthy, happy, and productive.
And who doesn't want to be all those things? When people transition to a fully plant-based diet, there's one food that they universally miss. It's tasty, salty, versatile, and melts in your mouth. That's cheese. I asked Dr. Gobble to tell us why we might want to lay off the cheese.
Cheese happens to be probably the number one source of fat in people's diet. Fat, saturated fat, high in calories, and that's probably the easiest place for a lot of people to reduce calories is by just cutting out the fat, the cheese, which is the big source of fat. So I can tell people, well, we really need to reduce fat intake. And I explain what fat is. There's twice as many calories in a gram of fat than there is in carbohydrate or protein. And there are many sources of fat. We add, we put oil on, or we spreads with butter or margarine or mayonnaise. And these are sources of fat. But cheese is probably the number one source of fat. And that's in so many things. And you'll find that restaurants, there'll be restaurants, you think they must work for the cheese industry because there's cheese in everything. It's usually a pizza and all these cannellonis and things that have all this cheese in it. It's very high in calories. So
it's really hard to get around. But what do you, is there a replacement? Is there, are there alternatives? What
there are alternatives, yeah. So we do the CHIP class, which is a complete health improvement program. And part of that is food demonstrations and samples. And just this week, we were sampling cheese alternatives, all right? And the people love this because they think, oh, how can I do without my cheese? I got to have my cheese. And so we go, okay, let's show you something very simple. In 10 minutes, you could have cheese. Well, kind of. Anyway, so.
Takes 10 years to make cheese, though.
That's right. So this is much more efficient.
10 minutes,
that's
yeah.
One of the stories I tell patients. I say, you know how long it takes to make cheese? Did you know anyone ever made cheese? And some of these older people would say, oh, yeah, my mother would make cheese, and it would take two weeks to make this little round of cheese, and then all us kids would eat it in an instant. And she'd say, oh, we're not making that anymore. So, but today it's ubiquitous everywhere because of the food production. But what we do is we take cashews, okay? Cashew nuts, very simple, and we put them in some water. We soak them in the blender. We have one of these powerful blenders. Put a little bit of water in there, a little half cup with some cashews, and then, you know, 5 to 7 minutes. Then we take some like garlic powder, onion powder, and then nutritional yeast. You know what that is? It's just a real nice, flavorful savor. It gives that cheesy, savory flavor. Put 3-4 tablespoons of that in there, and then just whiz it up. And almost instantly, it's a cheesy flavor. Now, that's a kind of a white cheese. But we want to make it look more like cheese. So we take some roasted red peppers. These are the, you know, like this kind of pepper, but they've been grilled. You can make your own. You know, you can grill your own or saute them, and it softens them up. Put them in there, and it'll take on that color. Blend it in the blender with it. Just smooths it all out. And you can get them in little jars already roasted for you. And that's simple. But to put that in there, it gives you that nice color, and people go, wow, that's great. It's a great spread. And if you put it in the refrigerator, it gets real thick, so it can be a nice spread. It's more like the nacho cheese type of thing. Great for dips. And if you want to put a little bit of chili powder in there, give it a little bite, you know, then some people like that, give it a little Mexican flavor. But that could be a great cheese substitute. And we like to share with them how to do that, so there's not... They're not getting rid of cheese per se, but the real cheese they are limiting. Mm. And it makes a huge difference.
Right. Now, sometimes I get asked, someone who's really thin and they're struggling to gain weight, is there a healthy way to gain weight?
Well, you find young people in their 30s that are very thin, they'll want to gain weight. And so I try to encourage them to say, well, you're actually doing okay. You're within your weight range. But they're just not comfortable with it. And so I just say, give it some time, but eat healthy. They eat a nice, and I try to direct them to eat properly. And you won't have to really worry about it. But someone who is on the very low end of weight, and they really need to gain some weight, especially an older person that's lost a lot of weight, and they need... Okay, now we need to increase the calories of high-nutrient foods, especially for older folks that want to gain weight. So, again, the foods have lots of color, but here we want to get concentrated calories of healthy nutrients. So that would be like this cheese I just described, using that, using avocado, having energy-dense foods like the starchy potato or squash, and using some of these sauces on there. This will increase calorie and concentrated calorie intake.
So you're talking about nuts, avocados. So these are high-fat foods, but they're still whole foods.
That's right. And that's something we have to remember. We want the whole foods as near as grown as possible. And if all we're going to do is grind them or blend them up or chop them, that's fine, but they started out as the whole food when we got it. That's important. But when it comes to, we don't want to be adding oils and those types of things. You can add other nuts and put those in there. It makes a difference.
So if you've been putting off making a lifestyle change, ask yourself what's important to you and where you see yourself in 10 years' time if you continue doing what you're doing. And if that thought makes you uncomfortable, then find yourself a health coach. They can help you set your priorities and will work alongside you to achieve your health goals. Not all at once, but step by step. Remember, you're going to need patience and persistence, and if you fall off the wagon, get right back on it. As you eat, be mindful of all the goodness contained in your food. Relish that and be more grateful than ever. It'll change the way you think. Include the people around you, you know, your family, your friends, and even your social media community in the changes that you're making. They'll benefit right along with you. Just share the love. That's all for me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.